A very good morning to you.
In a few moments, I'm going to be talking to Rory McKiernan. Rory McKiernan's a journalist, columnist, and a social campaigner. And he wrote a very interesting piece last week in The Independent, I think it was. I'm not sure which newspaper it was. But it's all about the Corrib Cass protesters and everything that happened going on up there with the Shell to Sea campaign and everything else. And he's going to be coming on and talking to us about, did the Corrib Cass protesters actually do the state a favour? Did we learn things from that whole campaign that have kind of served us all better going forward? So we'll be talking to Rory in a few moments at about 10 past 11. Joining me on the phone now, I have Rory McKiernan. Good morning, Rory. How are you?
Good morning. How are you doing? Are you well?
Not too bad at all, Rory. What's the weather like?
Well, I'm sitting down in Aran Key here.
I thought you were the other side of the country when I talked to you last week,
no,
I think.
No, I'm in Dublin.
You're in Dublin. Well, then I know what the weather is like.
Yeah, yeah.
As long as it's not raining, says you, it's all that matters.
No, it's not too bad.
Rory, you wrote a really interesting piece there last week. Kind of looking over the whole Corrib Cass protests and some of the lessons the campaign has taught us. You likened it to a David versus Goliath battle. Maybe we'd start there and kind of put it into context what the battle was all about and how it started and who were the protagonists.
Yeah, well, I'll tell you my own personal story in it. Basically, I was living in Donegal maybe 10 or more years ago, working as a community worker, and I happened to be down in Galway one weekend, and I popped into an event called the Grassroots Gathering, and at that, there were three speakers, a school teacher from North Mayo, a former oil and gas worker from Connemara, and a nun from Fermanagh who had previously worked in Nigeria. And they were all speaking about this Corrib Cass plan and what was being proposed and what was going to happen. And it sort of sent a chill down my spine, really, because I realised what was on the cards. Essentially, what was being proposed was one of the biggest gas refineries in Western Europe to be built on effectively unstable bogland up in North Mayo, and have a massive pipeline running inland, a type of project that hadn't really been done before in this particular specification. Quite often the gas is processed out at sea, so it would be a high-pressure mm-hmm. gas pipeline running through what is actually a special habitat area protected under European legislation. But beyond all of that, there were environmental concerns, there were health and safety concerns for people's livelihoods, the concerns about wildlife and nature and all that. But there were also bigger concerns about the economics of the project, given that there was a deal done by particularly Ray Burke, a former Fianna Fáil minister at the time, that what effectively meant that Ireland was giving away its natural resources, and particularly any potential oil and gas findings, with very little or no benefit to the state. And beyond that, then, in later years, it transpired that the oil and gas industry could write off a lot of their development costs. So what we have now is a massive gas find off the coast, off the west coast of Ireland, but a very actual, real little benefit to the Irish people, the Irish exchequer. Now, there are people that will argue that we don't have a well-developed oil and gas industry in this country, mm-hmm. and we needed to give those favourable terms. But most serious commentators or analysts in the industry worldwide would pretty much agree that the terms were overly generous. So anyway, I followed the campaign for years to come then, and it was essentially a small Gaeltacht, mostly, well, not all Irish-speaking, but an Irish-speaking community, a very, very remote community, cut off from all the main motorways and whatnot. And so out of the eyes of most of the journalists are based in Dublin and that. And the project is essentially led by Shell, who are the fourth biggest company in the world. And now I'll repeat that, the fourth biggest company in the world. Yeah. They're very big.
It's a big company.
And the junior partner was Statoil, which is owned by the Norwegian government. Mm-hmm. And then there's another partner that has changed hands several times with Vermilion at the present time. So that's the rough outline of, you know, how it all came about, really.
So this small community of Ross Port, they gathered themselves together, they got organised, and they dug in for a battle, and it became a very protracted battle and a very, very nasty one.
It did indeed, yeah. Like, a lot of the community up there are farming and fishing, and I suppose they're people that have, they're hardy people that have been through a lot. Like, some of the people there, I think the Curduffs, if I'm right, down the plantation of Ulster several hundred years ago, there was that saying, I think it was Cromwell, to hell or to Connacht. And a lot of the people up in that region actually originally came from Ulster. And some of them had to actually, like, you remember that Bull McCabe in the field, mm-hmm. where he's actually fertilising the field with seaweed because the land is that bad in Connacht. And some of those people actually had to make their land viable through use of seaweed. So it was hard living. And so there are people that weren't prepared to be walked on, that they fought hard to keep their living where they were. They weren't necessarily Luddites or anti-progress or anything like that, as some people would suggest. And they just stood up for themselves. And when you stand up against the might of the likes of Shell and effectively then the support of the state, then things get tense, as they did. And I think one of the more famous incidents is when the so-called, called the Rossport Five men that... They didn't want Shell to be on their land, and they supposed they disobeyed a court order, and they were jailed at the behest of Shell indefinitely. Yeah. And they ended up spending 94 days in prison. And at the end of it all, Shell apologised. They realised that they made a mistake. But mostly kind of, not all elderly, but older men, ordinary, decent men that were jailed for 94 days for standing up for their rights. And there are bigger issues around the planning of the project. It was done in a very ad hoc, piecemeal kind of way. Numerous different types of consents given for the pipeline, for the refinery, for all different components of it. So it was made sort of, I don't know if it was intentionally made so complex.
Yeah.
But I think it's widely acknowledged that the planning wasn't done very well. But there were numerous other incidences then when people were beaten and battered and jailed, and like groups like Amnesty International and the UN Rapporteur on Human Rights Defenders and Frontline Defenders.
Yeah.
Many, many people, Peter McVeary, have spoken out about human rights abuses over the years. And really, like, you know, I think there's been some TV footage of protesters that maybe weren't the most innocent in some ways. They were, you know, standing up and getting stuck in. But generally, it seemed that they were non-violent, and that's been my experience as well.
Yeah, well, it was, I mean, people will remember, we did see all the scenes of the protests, and we seen, you know, heavy-handed police and all kinds of things like that. But from my memory anyway, I think it was the first time we probably seen a whole range of shady deals, if we want to call it that. The kind of stuff that went on in car parks at 3 o'clock in the morning, where people were doing shady deals, and it was the first time maybe we got to focus in and say, well, hold on a minute, planning laws were bypassed, environmental protection's been ignored here, civil liberties, all of these things were kind of shoved aside in the push to get this done, and we could probably make a parallel in the last couple of years with the way people have protested against Irish water. There was some similarities there, but the Corrib gas line was the first time I can remember anyway where all of a sudden all of these things were beginning to be highlighted as to who was doing the deals and whose behalf were they doing and how and why.
Yeah, I think the Corrib gas project in particular, it can be a hard one to get your head around. The simple analysis is David and Goliath, but there's so many different facets to the whole thing. And I think the Irish public quite often can get lost in the whole thing, particularly when the media reporting hasn't been as in-depth or comprehensive as it should have been, perhaps. But I think even now people are starting to realise there's a bigger story here about the ownership and control of natural resources. And even now, when we look back at the original onset of the project, like the original senior planning inspector, Kevin Moore, actually rejected it. And I quote directly, and he said, from a strategic planning perspective, this is the wrong site. from the perspective of government policy, which seeks to foster balanced regional development, this is the wrong site. From the perspective of minimising environmental impact, this is the wrong site. And consequently, from the perspective of sustainable development, this is the wrong site. So what happened then, basically, it was rejected. And some not that long later, the then Taoiseach, Bertie Ahern, with two ministers, what were ministers, Dermot Ahern and Martin Cullen, met with Shell senior management in Dublin. And again, just several months after that, the planning permission was granted. So we can only speculate as to what transpired in those meetings and how it happened. But we know when we look at the floods and so many other issues going on in Ireland that planning has been done very bad. And we know from the different tribunals that corruption has taken place in this country. And I don't know the ins and outs of what exactly transpired with the Shell thing, but I'd love to see bigger questions asked. And, it's still worth considering. But not to lament on it either, I think we need to kind of take some lessons and to be more vigilant. And I think those, particularly those up in Leitrim now that are looking at the potential start of the fracking industry, have learned a lot of lessons about how to keep vigilant on these kind of things.
Well, it did, as you say. I mean, you know, taking it up to the present day, a lot of the lessons that were learned through that whole process, there was very important safety improvements were brought to the project as a result of the protests. It also, the whole debate on how we deal with our natural resources, as you say, we see all of the money in the world and everything else is all goes around natural resources, oil and gas and everything else, and little old Ireland basically gave it away. So it did bring that debate to the table as to, well, hold on a minute, you know, there has to be something in this for us. And, you know, even focusing in on policing methods and everything else, it did bring all of that to the fore, and it at least brought it all to the debate table.
Yeah, absolutely. I don't think they will get away with any kind of a similar project again, and definitely not in the same fashion. So I think... you know, and that was my main motivation in writing the piece, was I wanted to pay testimony and credit to the community that stuck up. And like a lot of these people have been through the middle, like, as I said, beatings and jailings and harassment and intimidation. Mm-hmm. And they're just ordinary people that were trying to get on with their lives, and were doing what in a good democracy should be allowed to do, which is question and object. And I think they've been hard done by a lot of the commentary that's out there. And in the reaction to the article that I did write has been overwhelmingly positive. And I do think when Irish people, mostly given the facts, are very fair-minded, and they realise that you know, the people did what we want most people to do, which is stand up for your rights. And as we celebrate and commemorate 1916 and go into this year, I think these issues are coming more and more to the fore, where start to take on our rights and responsibilities as citizens to claim what kind of country we want, rather than to wait and rely on politicians to do it for us. So it's up to the citizen, so to speak.
Apologies, go ahead.
Yeah, so I'm basically saying it's up to the citizen to stake their right to what kind of country they want, and I think the people in North Mayo have served us well in that way.
Absolutely, they have. And, you know, as I said, from my memory, as I say, anyway, it was the first time a lot of these issues were highlighted, and, you know, it took a small rural community, but that's the example we need to follow now. And just as you say, people's rights are there, and we need to fight for them at times. I mean, as you mentioned fracking there, fracking is kind of the ghost on the horizon now, or the spectre on the horizon, if we want to call it that. Lots of people are talking about it, lots of people maybe don't understand it, and we need now to be aware of it, and as you say, this example is one of where people can stand up and maybe make a difference.
Yeah, well, particularly around fracking, it's a very invasive kind of high pressure drilling technique that goes under the water table and injects chemicals into the water. I won't go into the detail, but the main issue at the moment, as I see it, is that one of the companies leading the Environmental Protection Agency study into fracking they're actually, they're on record as being a pro-fracking company. So if we want to do good planning in this country, we need independent, trustworthy experts and analysis. And any company that has a record of being pro or indeed against, you know, we need, just need good governance. And Irish people need to be respected by those that work for us. And we have to remember that civil servants are there to serve and politicians are there to work for us as well. And we, as people, need to remind them that and also do our bit when we can.
Absolutely, Rory. Well, listen, it's great to talk to you. And as I say, the piece itself is a great old read. And if anybody wants to see it, they can go along to the website and have a look. It was the Irish Independent, if I'm correct, was it?
Irish Times,
I beg your pardon. They won't thank me for that, but...
So the title of the piece is... Corrib gas protesters did state some service.
Yeah.
And it's on my website as well. It's Rory McKiernan.
Yeah. Okay. Rory, listen, thanks a lot for talking to us this morning. It's been great talking to you. And shall we hopefully talk to you again in the future? Take care.
Pleasure. Thanks very much.
Thank you. All the best. Take care. Bye-bye. There you go, folks. That's Rory McKiernan.